Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Hey everyone, this is your host, Tim Rutten. Today, we're sharing another insight-packed conference panel, where this time we're going to talk about how banks and credit unions are reimagining digital transformation. Stay tuned to listen as moderator Jen Rampe is in conversation with the experts from Endava, Entrust, KeyBank, and Navy Federal Credit Union about how banks can modernize without rewriting or replacing their entire tech stack. Enjoy.
We have a terrific group right here, and I want to take a minute to just start off with, this is a topic that's very common to all of us. I think everyone in this room has really been thinking about modernization, and we might approach it different ways. So the idea here today is we're going to kind of unpack that a little bit, think about how we might do it better, and also not reinvent the wheel. First off, I'm Jan Rempe. I'm part of our customer success team at Backbase. I'm privileged to work with many of you, so happy to see you all here. Again, this group is a cross-section of bank, credit union, industry experts, and have a lot of depth of experience that we can share today. But we're also going to welcome some questions at the end. Again, the idea is what's relevant today about modernization? How do we make improvements specifically, thoughtfully, intentionally, and do it in a smart way through a sequence of steps so that we have some real commonality to what we're trying to deliver to our customers and our members? So with that, let's do a quick introduction to our panelists. We'll start with Alicia, since you're, we'll just go down the line.
Hi, I'm Alicia Stone. I work at KeyBank in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm a senior technology executive at KeyBank responsible for our commercial applications. And KeyBank just celebrated 200 years last month. So
wow.
Very exciting.
That's very impressive. I'm Justin Zeidman, the Vice President of Digital Strategy at Navy Federal Credit Union. So I oversee a lot of components of our digital strategy, as well as our consumer permission data program, all about facilitating sharing of member data both into and out of the credit union.
Great.
Hi, everyone. My name is Andy Cease. I work for Entrust, which is a technology partner to Backbase. We've been working together for the last several years globally to bring payment and identity innovation to financial institutions such as yourselves.
And I'm Fred Fuller. I have global responsibility for banking and payments at Endava. Endava is a business and technology consulting firm that is AI-led, which is evidenced by an announcement this week with our partnership with OpenAI. So we're excited to be in the space and glad to be on stage.
Terrific. Yeah, I'm sure that'll come up in our conversation today. So a little bit of a preview. But we'll start first with a couple of questions. And again, you all can feel free to jump in. But for Justin, Navy Federal is known for its member first mission, of course, and it's known that that is really thoughtful about innovation and how you balance the member experience with the architecture and the technology and really stability. So tell us a little bit about how you think about that and putting it into perspective from where you sit.
For sure. So from our vantage point, transformation and modernization are never done just for transformation and modernization's sake. The North Star that you're working towards becomes incredibly important. And for us, when we sort of began our digital transformation journey a few years back, there were sort of three pillars that made up our North Star. The pithy statement was, know me, show me, and do it for me. Mm-hmm. And so to translate, that's, give our members personalized experiences, give our members unified experiences across the various platforms where they interact with the credit union, and give them automated experiences where we're actively taking that role to deliver value for them and make the process of servicing in a digital capacity as easy as possible. And so in endeavoring to do that, the first question we had to ask is what needs to be in place from an infrastructural standpoint to deliver on that? So at the end of the day, partnering with someone like Backbase, our members don't care what the system could do. They care what it can do. And if the infrastructure isn't in place to deliver on the promise of that transformation, then it doesn't actually drive value for them. So yesterday, Tim talked a little bit about Operation Overlord, which was sort of this, you know, initial process of starting to MVP some of the back-based capabilities to our membership. But what he didn't talk about is that was paralleled with another mission that was happening at the credit union at the time, something we call Mission Data, which was effectively, an overarching work effort for us to unify some disparate data warehouses within the credit union and move towards a cloud-based API architecture for data sharing, both within the credit union mm-hmm. and outside the credit union. And that became an incredibly important foundation to deliver on the promise of personalization, automation, and unified experiences across channels. And so I think, you know, one of the takeaways for us along the way is that digital transformation and data transformation really need to go hand in hand to deliver on the value and opportunity that we saw for our members. But beyond that, we tried to be smart as we were going along with sort of iterative development, right? Starting small, building in ways that were reusable both across channels and could build upon each other within the same experience, right? Mm-hmm. So a great example, and you know, this is close to my heart because we helped to bring a lot of these capabilities powered by permission data sharing into the credit union. But you know, when we first started to drive experiences that allowed members to share data from third parties with the credit union, we started with an automation use case that allowed members to link accounts for ACH transfers. And so we built the rails to share some very rudimentary data and automate a process that had always been a pain point. But we were able to use that integration to go a little bit deeper and leverage those same data rails to pull in a broader swath of data elements for a personal financial management use case. So sort of leveraging that same integration or similar integration in a deeper way with more data. When we integrated the experience around that capabilities, we used a highly configurable microsite that was much easier for us to change in real time. It was much easier for us to edit without having to touch some of the core stack. And that allowed us to bring to market visualizations of member finances within a single financial health portal in quick succession, make changes based on member feedback, iterate very quickly. And from there, we're now looking to take what was on that microsite, take the learnings from that microsite, and begin to embed some of those capabilities within the core experience on the account summary page. So just kind of an example of how we took this iterative approach, you know, building upon capabilities that were already there, finding ways, to develop sort of reusable capabilities and always working towards that North Star.
Andy, I saw you also nodding. Do you have some thoughts on that same subject, really about how do you balance the experience with stability?
Yeah, I think what's interesting about this particularly is I do a number of conferences and panels and talk to a lot of clients and prospects. And the question typically is, how can I monetize it? Right? Like, I'll do something with my data as soon as I can monetize it. And you're like, whoa, there's 700 reasons to get your data in order. Monetizing it is almost like the last one, right? So hearing about like truly taking that foundational approach and saying, we're going to build from the ground up and create the infrastructure and the things that we need to be successful and create that great member experience and maximize a new platform, right? New capabilities. It's really refreshing to hear. So most people go straight into monetization. How quickly can I get a return on this investment? Like, it's all about the business case. Mm-hmm. And I would argue for anybody around the globe in a financial institution, I would back away from that and start asking yourself some different questions, right? So I would ask yourself questions around, what does irrelevance look like in 3 years, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that sounds really scary to say, but we've heard it, right? AI is here, it's real, and we've got some different kind of capabilities there, but it's really refreshing to hear that.
And I agree. And I think that you talked about the data being the foundation. You talked a lot about the customer and how the customer can leverage that data. One thing that we thought about too is like, how can we leverage that internally and how can we help our customers better by leveraging that data? So making it reusable, not just externally, but internally as well.
Nice. Anything else?
I would just say from the, you know, in terms of reusability, and we heard this yesterday, it's really exciting to start to hear about the identity lifecycle and moving away from, I need a point product to do a point thing, and instead looking at use cases, but not just use cases, but use cases that comprise an entire journey that person's going on. And it's gonna go through the branch, it's gonna happen online through mobile, and these aren't distinct discrete experiences, they're all being had by one consumer. How do those things ladder into one another? How can a financial institution lean into what makes them unique, right? And craft that, because it certainly isn't one size fit all. Yeah. So I think that's, and again, that all comes back to having the data, being able to pull that up and serve it in the right way at the right time via the right channel.
Right. Optimizing how do we use the data is definitely something that we'll be all focused on. Sort of a good segue to that, Alicia, starting with you, since composable banking is again, topic of the day. What does that look like in your world right now? And what's the kind of where are you headed? What's the future state to actually take it further?
I think what's really interesting about composable banking is really the foundation and getting the foundation right and creating the building blocks. So a lot of people, we think about the destination, we don't think about the journey. We want to get to that use case, we want to get to that thing we're trying to build and really not trying to take and understand the problem we're trying to solve. And so I think in Key, what we've decided to do is really think about from it's a co-partnership between tech and the business. A lot of times the business will say, I want this X functionality and I want it tomorrow. It's really cool. Everyone has it. Let me get it. And my response will be like, it's great. But then we have to do X, Y, and Z to modernize the legacy components. And then you see their eyes gloss over and they're like, what are you talking about? I just want that thing. Uh-huh. And I said, you don't just want that thing because you won't be able to scale. So by having people understand why it's important to do the tech upgrades, to do the modernization, to make sure that when you ask me for that next request, I can be ready to provide that for you and go to market faster. That is something that we're continually working in our organization to help people understand, because I think that's going to be important for us to be able to respond to all these new market conditions even faster and better. I think the other thing is really working, I talked about the building blocks, but really working to not put big bets out there. So think about how we can make it modular, leverage APIs, leverage different partners in order to be successful and scalable to meet the needs of our customers.
Yeah, I love the comment about working with other business units. And in the conversation about member journey, right? Oftentimes the journey goes across channels as well as across business units. And I think that's such an important part of composable banking is thinking not just about the component of the journey that's within the digital platform, but the impacts that that journey has across branch, across contact center, and really how to use technology to elevate the experiences that members are having in the components of the journey that sort of go outside of digital channels.
Right. And I think this piece in particular, as you said, it's not something that you can just do in isolation. It's you have to have more of a broader view of what you're trying to accomplish and what you're working with in terms of the building blocks. How about you also? We're also looking at how you're structuring teams in tech to try to achieve this modular modernization. Is that something that you've come across as well in your work with large FIs?
Yeah, I think there's something that hasn't been talked about a lot here, which is, you know, in doing big modernization efforts, one of the things that's we talk about the technology, right? It's the technology, and I hate that we had to follow that last panel because I thought it was absolutely incredible. All the conferences I go to, we all go to, right? I never hear a panel on leadership. And I think that the soft skills, right? These are the things that will become the thing of the future that will be so critical. So when you talk about the teams, I think the previous panel did a great job of, you know, you may not have the right people in place. Can you take them on the journey with you, et cetera? But when you look at modernization, there's a question about what does AI do for modernization, right? And so we have a solution, right? So shameless plug, but it automates, right? So if you think about a modernization effort in the form of you first have to do discovery, then you do design, then you do the build, then you do the run and the operate. If you look at the discovery and the design processes, those can be quickly and easily automated via AI, right? So if you can do those things and then you can take a modernization effort down from, you know, I don't know, like if you can cut it by 10%, 20%, 30%, well, now you're having a material impact on one of the biggest barriers to entry, right? Which is the cost and time associated with doing a modernization effort. So I think leveraging current technology, making sure that you have buy-in from the top down, and then making sure that you have the right people in place with the right skills. And if you don't, then train them, right? Mm-hmm. But I think it does take a holistic approach and thought to a modernization effort.
And it can be across the entire financial institution. It's just not one pocket. It's not just digital. It's everywhere. And I'm glad we brought up the teams, the topic of the teams and the people involved too, because I think at one point when we talked earlier, Fred, you mentioned that modernization is a multiplier, not a fix. So you do need to think about that in terms of, you know, the human interaction with customers, members, but also the technology that goes with it. There was a couple of other things I think that might make sense to bring up here. We talked a little bit about this, Andy, yesterday, about how the composability and modernization also can impact things like regulatory compliance, things that, you know, are kind of also top of mind, but maybe not something that our customers worry about, but you all do.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we were talking about it, I think, in the context of, you know, what do we see outside of the United States? What are some of the things that are constant no matter where you are? So last week at Money 2020 Asia in Bangkok, right, a vastly different way to pay, vastly different history of how that financial system came to be across, you know, how many languages. But the one thing that was constant that I think we all hear day in and day out is fraud. And it wasn't necessarily a specific type of fraud. It was this sense that it's growing. And that if you were to ask us in 2022, what would be the primary vectors of fraud being exploited today, it would be hard to know and it'd be hard to anticipate that. And so I think that, you know, is a, in some ways a testament to this platform position, this modular position, this sense of future-proofness. And that is to say, you know, on the last panel, the unknown unknowns. You can prepare for the things that you're aware of, but there are going to be these other things that are black swan events, et cetera. And we don't know what the answers to that will be, but we do know that if you're in a certain type of technology posture and you've thought diligently about that member experience, you can apply those two very quickly to react to whatever the future challenge is and do so in a way that really fits your brand and how you want that person to interact with your institution.
And I think you bring up an interesting point, right, which is, and we all know this, which is nothing happens in a silo, right? So you mentioned fraud. Fraud is a global topic. We've talked about it here. You mentioned starting with data. The solution to fraud is data, right? So all of these things are very kind of circular. I think globally, when we look at what is taking place and what's happening, you mentioned, you know, the fraud in China or in Money 2020. And there are, geographically, I think when we think about modernization, it depends on what is going on in that geography and what they're taking on. I think the big takeaway is that foundationally, everybody knows that you have to have a dynamic platform, right? The current environment, look at the tariff conversations and what that's done to the market, right? And everybody knows that there's volatility. We're coming out of, you know, we have a pandemic and then we have the rates going up overnight and et cetera, et cetera. So everybody knows that they need that flexibility. We don't know what's the future of a distributed ledger technology looks like, right? What does crypto look like? Blockchain, all those things, what are they going to do? We don't know. Like everybody will, there are plenty of people that will stand up on this stage and tell you what it will be or where it's going. Nobody knows. So you have to be prepared for whatever that answer might be. And I think globally, that's what we're seeing is everybody's preparing for that with focus in different places, right? So if you look at UPI in India and you look at Pix in Brazil, they have different needs. It's a different market. They have a different economy and ecosystem, mm-hmm. right? So the DORA in Europe, 1033, what's going to happen here with that? What's going to happen with the tariffs and the rates and the economy? So everybody's got kind of a slightly different focus, but the customer experience rules the day, right?
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, bringing up the international perspective, I think, is so important when talking about modernization, because you're right. There are problems that are universal. And I think when you look on a global basis, solutions are often geographically specific based on all those unique circumstances, regulation, consumer needs, and that type of geography. But I also think there's wisdom in looking to how countries across the globe have solved those problems, and how and when the tidal wave of those solutions may start making it to the U.S. I worked in the credit card world before moving over to digital at Navy Federal, and I remember when EMV chips were, you know, that was a big thing in Europe, and it took a couple of years for the tidal wave to come across. Now we're seeing that, you know, internationally, digital wallets are enormous. That's the primary way that a lot of countries across the world are spending. You know, when is that tidal wave gonna make it to the U.S., and how can banks and credit unions be prepared from a modernization perspective for these trends that are emerging on a consumer basis? Open banking is another great example where, you know, U.S. was pretty late to the game on regulation around that. There's some early adopters in that space. I'm proud to say Navy Federal is one of them. But I also think that is another sort of component of modernization that's quickly approaching, and one that, if you look on a global basis, is much further penetrated than it is in the U.S. And I think very much to the benefit of consumers internationally.
And the mobile wallet piece is interesting, not just because it's going to come for some of these traditional financial use cases, but it's a wallet for things beyond just payment cards. All of a sudden, right, a financial institution could be onboarding a new user in a world where they can actually reference the mobile driver's license in that secure element on the iPhone, as opposed to, right, asserting some physical document or doing that via signals or something. So, you know, I think the mobile wallet brings this whole new realm of identity where you're able to, in some ways, tokenize that identity and assert exactly the pieces of it you need to without necessarily seeding over all of your core information, just as we do with payment cards today. Mm-hmm. So when I go and pay for an age-restricted item, right, the payment is tokenized, but I'm handing over my driver's license to buy that six-pack of beer. And a whole bunch of information is on that document, right, that doesn't need to be with that merchant. They just need to know binary, am I over a certain age? So, right, I think when we sort of look beyond just the financial use cases, when we think about mobile wallets, there's going to be these opportunities of, wow, I could actually bring customers into the ecosystem more easily because of what my government is doing alongside with this same technology.
Right, and a lot of localization goes into that too. And I think, so Fred, working on a global scale with financial institutions of all size, shape, and digital maturity, I mean, it's something that you see. And we talked about a few things here. Are there any patterns that you see that apply specifically to this group and this audience?
That's interesting. First and foremost, the pattern is modernize, yeah. Right? get up to speed, get up to date, be ready for whatever changes are coming. I think that is probably the single biggest thing to call out. I think it's important for everybody in this room to probably consider a global view and studying a little bit on what is happening globally. So if you go to the payment conferences and you hear about this, so UPI, how many people in here are familiar with UPI in India? I can't see anything, but hey. So I'm assuming all the hands went up. All the hands are up. It's great. It's their P2P real-time payments platform, and the adoption is astronomical, but it's also sponsored by the government and kind of run by the government, right? And so there's an element of, cool, that's good for them. Why do we care, right? Then you take in Brazil, who has Pix and the QR code solution, and that is a real-time payment solution. And what they're solving for in those geographies are the unbanked, right? These are people that don't have credit cards. Well, like that's a wave that travels around the globe. And so now I know that there are governments in Southeast Asia that are talking about building out a switch to handle global P2P payments, real-time payments. If they do that, then what happens with SWIFT? Does SWIFT start to get displaced? And what happens here? So if you go around the globe, I can remember, I'm going to date myself, if you go back 15 years, if you go back about 15 years, I can remember people were banking on their phones in Nigeria, right? Because they didn't have laptops, because they didn't have the things that we have, right? It wasn't abundant. So they had to figure out what is the solution for that market. And that, like, what is it? Necessity is the mother of invention, right? And so those are the things that hit, and then they start to spread globally. So in the U.S., right, I don't think it's a big secret that, you know, we have the RTP rails and FedNow, and adoption is a little bit low on those things in terms of actual usage. But what will drive adoption is going to be this global influence that comes around, right? Because nobody wants to lose out on the money. I don't want somebody else settling my transactions and all that good stuff. So I think it's really important to have a view of what's happening globally and what's coming around. When you look at DORA, when you look at the regulatory, right, there's a couple things that influence our lives. Regulatory is one of the biggest ones. And so where are we with regulatory? And again, what is the platform and the foundation from which we'll be able to respond to any demand or challenge that comes out of the market?
It seems in all many of the sessions this in the last couple of days, payments has been a big topic. I mean, and obviously, now that we know checks is going to go away in September, we can actually think about what are the other options we have, and there's many, but globally, there's a different way of doing things. So I think that's also can, as you said, be a wave that we might see filter over to North America as well. So let's talk about value a little bit. And Andy, we can start with you. Talk about a little bit about one place where your organization has been able to unlock growth and value. That's really measurable. I mean, we won't call it monetizing, but where there's an ROI that can be captured and you can say, okay, this was meaningful, not just to our customers, but also to our business unit.
Yeah, I think with any good ROI, right, there's this halo effect of ultimately you're doing something, investing in an experience that is going to potentially extract more value from that user, but also, right, ideally extend the relationship, foster trust with that end user. So I think that's, right, the guiding principle of whatever you're doing, make sure you're improving the lives of the people that trust you with their finances. Specifically, you know, Backbase and Entrust have worked together to accelerate the time to first spend, time to first tap, if you will. So, you know, going through KYC, eKYC is necessary, but there's not any inherent value in doing it, right? So the users come out the other side, hopefully have proven themselves trustworthy, but they have no, right, there's no unique value to them until they're activated with, in this case, a debit card or a credit card. So I think that's one specific sort of tactical answer of, what is a more general concept of you're going to always need to prove who this person is in some way. How are you making sure that they can then come out the side of it and do what they want to do more easily and accomplish that task? I think users aren't excited about using AI for the sake of AI. They're excited about an opportunity to get an answer faster, be smarter, quicker, and be more effective and move on with their life. And AI is going to bring that to us, but right, it's going to come through in just these meaningful seconds and taps that are saved by, you know, what is ultimately going to be a much more secure experience, but also one that is easier. So I think those are like quick wins, and they're ones that will stack up whether your user is logging in every day or every month. But it's this meaningful impact that they're going to associate with the financial institution. And who's to say, you know, what the next thing is going to be, you know, whether, you know, buy now, pay later, crypto, right? There's all these things on the horizon, and you could place your bets, but you can actually come from a position of strength by saying, I don't have to choose now.
Right.
I'm getting in a platform that when the time is right, I can push to the X pay, or I can set up a BNPL contract. It's that nimble agility, I think, that is going to drive, right, any of these ROI impacts to the bottom line.
So for you, I was going to turn to you, Alicia. How do you think about the ROI in prioritization and how you start, you know, again, you're working with tech and business at the same time?
Yeah. Talk a little bit about our treasury onboarding project that we did. And we really did an analysis around how our clients are onboarding and how we can drive down the cost to serve. Mm-hmm. And so our thought process was at first, really, where do we see calls and volume coming in higher, and how can we push people through different channels instead of having them talk to our bankers who are our high value employees. And so we thought about, you know, looking at the data and understanding where people are coming in, the volume of that. And then we said with the power Backbase and some of our internal systems, we were able to create a self-service approach to a lot of the services that we provide from an onboarding perspective. And that allowed our clients to have a better response rate. So if you think about, we're 200 years old, we have a lot of different systems systems that are in place today. So our teams had to go to multiple systems to answer a question, or it had to go to multiple teams to answer a question for a client, and it took days, and it had to get to the right place. Now that client can do it themselves. So they can go into the system and add a user and things like that. So I think that it's really important that when you're thinking about ROI, you're not just thinking about, you know, we talked about it, like modernizing it for yourself and for the bank, but how is that going to impact the experience that the client's having as well, mm-hmm. and also drive down your cost. And so I think that was a good example of where we were able to partner, have digital experiences, but then sometimes they can be assisted by mm-hmm. our back office teams to help. But
no, and in parallel, I mean, I think there's two things that can be happening. We're striving towards growth, our customer or user experience, and also efficiency. So those things, when they all come together, are ideal. I think, Justin, you probably have some examples you'd like to share too.
Yeah, and it's interesting because value is such a, there's so many different ways to calculate and measure mm-hmm. value, right? There's monetization. Am I driving new business? There's efficiency. Am I cutting down on costs? One angle that you know, we've even been leaning into a little bit more is primacy, right? Mm-hmm. How are we ensuring that we're positioning ourselves to be the primary institution our members are banking mm-hmm. with? And a great way we've gained insight into that is having visibility into where our members are sharing their data. That gives us a sense of like where they're doing business outside the credit union. Mm-hmm. And for us, it's a good reminder that we are not just competing with, you know, other financial institutions when it comes to our members' eyeballs. We're mm-hmm. competing with Amazon and yeah. Apple, and you know, and the stakes are high. But you know, from our perspective, you know, one observation we have is that a lot of our members are sharing their data with Rocket Money. And we said, well, hey, there are capabilities that Rocket Money has that we could deliver to our members. We could make our digital servicing platform a place that has the types of features and capabilities that our members may feel they have to go outside the walls of the credit union to find. Mm-hmm. And that really helped to prompt us to go live with some new capabilities recently that allow our members to report transactions from their checking account that look like rent or utilities, so that they can go to the credit bureaus and that can help to boost their credit score. Tools that allow, with the member's permission, for us to take a look at their transactions and say, hey, did you know you're spending this much on Netflix and subscriptions? And, you know, I remember using it myself and I was like, I don't know, I'm still paying for Stitch Fix? That's from years ago. And so it's like, you know, tangible ways that we can help to save our members money, which is another sort of quantifiable value. Like how do you quantify the way that you're helping your members manage their finances and save money better? But it's also putting us in better competition with the world of financial services outside of just banks and credit unions. Because I think it's good to know that like we're not being benchmarked just against that. We're being benchmarked against the entire universe of digital experiences. And you know, oftentimes banks aren't on the cutting edge.
Right. Getting better all the time.
Yeah.
Did you want to add something too, Fred?
Well, I think as much as we say don't focus on that ROI and that immediate return on investment, the reality is all banks, credit unions, financial institutions behave differently, have different sort of cultures around that. Mm-hmm. And so you have to adjust accordingly, right? You guys are aligned with doing the right thing for your clients. And so you're spending your money in that way. And you know that it's a long-term investment. There are a lot of financial institutions that want that return in 6 months, right? And in 12 months. And if that's what it is, then the composability becomes that much more composable because you got to break it down into smaller chunks to get a victory to show that it's working and et cetera, et cetera. So there is just a level set and I think a grounding in every organization will be different in this regard. So no matter what I say about, you know, throw out the ROI, your organization may feel differently. So.
Right, right. Well, you know, and that's what makes each one of the organizations in the room have a special niche and the ability to serve their customers a little bit differently. Still a lot of common ground, obviously. So getting towards the end of our conversation today, if you were to share a few key takeaways on modernization from your perspective, you know, things that can either they're actionable or to keep top of mind, where would you start, Alicia?
I think really I would start with design for the customer journey, not the org chart. You are then able to scale the experience across silos. So if you talk to individuals and you talk to certain individuals in your organization, they're going to be very focused on what they do and how they do it and not thinking about how do I pass that downstream to that next group. So you really need to focus on designing for that customer journey, not the org chart.
Yeah, expanding on that a little bit, I would say member journeys are usually not channel specific, so don't design experiences that are channel specific. I know our approach has really been thinking about mobile, online, and back office as sort of different sides of the same coin. And I think ensuring that you're building in a way that enables you to sort of build once and enjoy thrice is very much an efficiency play that, mm-hmm. that helps with that kind of modular approach.
Absolutely.
I would leave you all with, modernization is a practice, not a project. And I think as you go forward, thinking of digital transformation as just this perpetual thing that we're all going to continue to be a part of. There was a time there coming out of the pandemic where it felt like, digital transformation, we just have to get to the other side of it. And we're quickly learning with AI and a number of other things coming online that it's going to be with us, right, for the future, and that building a practice around it, a discipline that can infuse within the organization and lead them towards that next thing, that next iterative step, will make all the difference. There's really not going to be an end to this modernization project, if you will.
There is no finish line.
No.
For me personally, it is. I don't have a great quote, so I'm disappointed. You guys.
We practice.
You guys dig me afterwards. I think there's an overriding theme here, and I talked about it a time or two on the panel, and it's not about the technology, right? It's not about the technology. It is about the people, and it is about getting the right people on board for the journey, right? So it is the C-suite down. So it's top to bottom and it's left to right. It's tech, it's product, it's business. Everybody needs to be on board with the journey and where we're going. And if they're not, then you're going to have challenges, right? Some of you have heard me say this. You can modernize your tech stack and go with an awesome digital core, and you can implement real-time payments. And you put that on a two-day fraud process, and what do you have? Nothing, right? So if everybody is not on board, it will fail. It will be a lot of money, right? You talk about ROI, it will absolutely obliterate. So I think that's the really important thing. And it kind of comes back to the previous panel, right? Which is like, there's this soft skill piece of it. And it's all really, really important. And the technology is a tool. It's not Mm-hmm. It's not the answer, it's the tool. It's the same thing with AI. When everybody talks about AI, like, there's stars in everybody's eyes that it's the solution. It's not. It's an augment to many solutions, right? It in and of itself is not the solution. So I think not just being siloed on the technology is critical.
Yeah, and Fred, I think you did have a good quote. I think you said, avoid tech for tech's sake.
let me start over. Thank you for reminding me.
I knew you'd get to it. No, it's wonderful. And I think we have a couple minutes for questions. We can't really see you, but I don't know. Is there anyone that has questions for this group before we wrap up completely for the day? That's a tough one. I don't know if you want to.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, thanks,
great
man.
Question.
I'll never make you a plant again. Well, look, I don't have a silver bullet answer for you to say ABC, here you go, like, check the box and let's all go roll it out, right? The reality is you need governance around AI, right? So, and every organization is doing that differently. So if you look at the trillionaires around the globe, what they're doing with AI is they have a high level organizational corporate governance, and then it gets distributed out into the BUs to be leveraged in a way that aligns with whatever those controls are, but they don't say use AI down here for fraud, for payments. They establish the governance, and then they say payments, if you want to leverage AI, you're free to do it. Mm-hmm. It's got to go through this governance process, checks and approvals and everything else, right? So we have ChatGPT rolled out at an enterprise level. It's behind our firewall, right? So we're not, are threats real? Absolutely. But that's an extended conversation that you have with your provider and within your organization to understand what the governance is, and to, because every organization's different too, right? So it's not something I could give you a uniform answer to, even if I had it, but to be candid, I don't have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's about like having the proper controls in place, like with anything, technology and banking. The fraudsters anywhere are leveraging that against us at all times, and they're thinking about it all the time and leveraging that. And so really thinking about how do you have the right controls in place and where do you have those controls in order to prevent things like that.
If anything, I think, you know, many financial institutions who are dabbling in AI can feel that the regulatory and risk component of it slows progress down, certainly more than you might see at a fintech or a startup or someone in the technology world. But to your point, that's one of the reasons why that layer is so important. You know, and I think financial institutions are wise to make sure they're not taking a move fast and break things approach to AI. I don't know many that are, but I think to your point, those types of risks are the reason why kind of a deliberative and kind of risk-informed approach is so important.
Thanks for contributing that, Robert. Any other questions? No. Well, so to wrap up, you know, modular thinking, again, something that's on everyone's mind and thought process. But what we've talked about today is really, it's intentional. It starts with framing priorities around the customer experience and leveraging the technical building blocks that you have at your disposal and then can making the smart decisions around those. So I'd like to thank our guests. I think it was really a great conversation to have at the end of the day. And some of them, not everyone will be here for a little bit. Some people have to catch flights. But if you would like to find time to speak with any of them, please do. And thank you again. It's a privilege to be here with all of you.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jauke and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.